Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, April 18th, 2017. Scores of children are treated at a stabilization center in Panyajar for acute malnutrition.
Some are caused by disease, because when the child have a medical problem like malaria, they are not able to eat food. That one now will reduce the immunity and they are susceptible to other things. They become malnourished because they cannot eat enough food.
And an SPLM-IO spokesman claims Riek Machar is being held under house arrest in South Africa.
If we want really peace to come, release him from South Africa, bring him to a table, create a conducive environment where they can sit and talk and iron out the differences. This dialogue should be really inclusive. And then we are very sure that, okay, peace will come.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Malnutrition is rampant in the southern part of former Unity State, threatening the lives of thousands of children. Local officials blame famine and inadequate medical services in the region on the nearly 4 years of violence in South Sudan. As we hear from Waki Simon Mudu in Juba, aid agencies are struggling to prevent the spread of hunger and acute malnutrition.
That is one of the children admitted at a Ganiel feeding center. A nurse puts her on a weighing scale to get her exact weight. Nyichoto Bob is a mother of 6 children and has been admitted at the center for 2 weeks because her child is diagnosed with severe acute malnutrition, which has resulted in other medical complications. Bob says aside from her child losing weight, she noticed she was passing watery stool and cried day and night. Bob immediately brought her daughter to the stabilization center where she was admitted. The child looks weak and has problems breathing. Speaking in her native Nuer language, Bob says she is grateful that her child is responding to treatment.
When I came here, my child was about to die. But for these last 2 weeks I am here, I can see a lot of improvements.
Bob, who is originally a resident of Bentiu town, traveled all the way to Ganiel for safety, medical services and food. Ton Biel, another mother of 4 children, is admitted at the center. Sitting on a mat holding her baby and waving flies from the baby's face, she describes in her native Nuer how she traveled from Mayendit County, where famine was declared in February.
I ran only with my children and left everything there because of the war. I have no households, no food.
The International Rescue Committee, supported by UNICEF and the World Food Program, runs the Center for Malnourished Children with the Acute Conditions. IRC nurse John Gadluak says the stabilization center admits at least 5 children every day. Nurses provide the children with nutritious food such as therapeutic plum nuts and milk. They also offer counseling to the mothers. Most of the children look extremely weak, have trouble breathing. Many are too weak to stand or sit. They hardly smile or cry when in need of help. Their eyes are sunken in. Gadluak says the center could admit more children if they have adequate supplies of nutritious food.
Let's say we have a shortage of supply, so we have a reduction of the admission. When the supply comes now, there is no problem, so we have increasing of admission.
Gadluak says there are 3 other centers in Panyajar where children are being diagnosed and given food and drugs for acute malnutrition. Peter Manyang is the clinical officer in charge of the stabilization center. He says there are 2 reasons why so many children are suffering from malnutrition in the former Unity State.
Some are caused by disease, because when the child have a medical problem like malaria, they are not able to eat food. That one now will reduce the immunity and they are susceptible to other things. They become malnourished because they cannot eat enough food. There also, even if they are not sick, they don't have enough food to eat at home because They are not cultivating now. People are gathered in one place due to the current conflict.
There are no government services in Panyajar because it is a rebel-controlled area. 8 agencies and UN officials have said the famine is man-made and totally preventable if South Sudan's political leaders would put their people first, not themselves. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A spokesman for the SPLM-IO claims rebel leader Riek Machar is being held under house arrest in South Africa against his will in the name of stability in South Sudan. SPLM-IO deputy spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel tells VOA's James Buddy that the government's mostly Dinka troops have been engaged in a campaign to eliminate other tribes.
We don't attack the government. We have not been attacking even anybody else, even including civilians. We protect the civilians still. The government, they think they have the ammunition that they can wipe up the IO. But when they come to attack our bases, we are okay with that because we are the opposition. But what is the need of going to attack the civilians? Attacking the civilians is direct attack on the tribe because these civilians, they are not Dinkas in those areas they attack. We have Dinkas in Bargasal, the northern side of Awil, they are Dinkas. In Warab, they are Dinkas. Why are not attacking them straight away? They go straight to attack our areas, the Equatorians, the newer areas, and those people who are not Dinkas. So this is complete genocide at the second place in the country.
The agreement that was signed is still not being fully implemented. What is the SPLM-IO's recipe for peace?
First of all, we would like the government to stop attacking our opposition. That is one. Two, we need the international community to put a table where the chairperson, our chairman, and the commander chief, Dr. Ramacher, can come and sit together with Safakir and settle things between the two of them. Instead of doing that, they decide to restrain or maybe put Riek Machar under house arrest in South Africa. So they want Safakir to continue doing the havoc. So if we want really peace to come, release him from South Africa, bring him to a table, create a conducive environment where they can sit and talk and iron out the differences. This dialogue should be really inclusive. And then we are very sure that, okay, peace will come.
Did you say that the international community is keeping your leader, Riek Machar, the former first vice president, under house arrest in South Africa?
That is what is happening in South Africa right now. It is because the international community, they do not want him to come back to South Sudan. They believe that when he comes to Sudan, he's going to continue having war. But he's wrong. He's a man of peace. We went to Juba peacefully, and he was forced to get out of Juba. When he came out, he wanted to make sure that people come down and talk. But instead of giving him the opportunity to explain what happened, he was sent to South Africa. And he cannot get out of there because that's what the world wants him to be there, which is wrong. Without Riek Machar in South Sudan, there is not going to be peace. That's to be very sincere.
Lam Paul Gabriel is deputy military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He spoke to VOA's James Buddy from the Uganda-South Sudan border. Atenuek Ateny, spokesman for President Salva Kiir, says those accusing the government of genocide are either paranoid or they don't know the meaning of the word. Opposition groups on Monday called on the international community to hold President Kiir accountable for what they say is a genocide being carried out by military and government militias.
When somebody listens to such a report, the only thing that comes up to my mind is that those who are talking about genocide might have forgotten the meaning of genocide. Simply because if they have not forgotten the meaning, then something is happening to them. It is either a paranoid kind of statement or they don't want to say the truth. The opposition has become weak. That's mean, you know, all the arms group that are fighting in South have become weak to the extent that they cannot fight the government to the point of toppling the government. And so they are now looking for somebody else to fight for them. Otherwise, what is called genocide in South Sudan is something that is completely lovable because I didn't see anywhere where the genocide can happen. When people in South Sudan here are living, you know, side by side, and then no major undertaking from the government that, you know, it has to fight a certain tribe to oblivion. So I don't know where all this thing comes from.
When we speak to the SPLM in opposition, they claim they don't fight. They are not involved in committing any crimes. It is your military and militia that are doing the fighting. They speak of the South Sudan military being formed on tribal basis.
That is why I said the opposition forces, or you call them this rebels, forces are looking for somebody else to fight the government of South Sudan. From that statement, they say they are not fighting the government. So it is the government alone that is carrying guns and kill civilians. Then they are talking about genocide, which is going to happen, that the government is there to commit genocide. The statement is completely that of a madness. If they are not fighting the government of South Sudan, then who the government of South Sudan is fighting then? It is the rebels, those bandits in Western Baragazar, are the ones that are attacking the government position. We are not on offensive. And the government of South Sudan is only defending itself when it is attacked by the bandits who are armed and trying to cause havoc in the country. Why would the government of South Sudan fight its own people if there are no rebels carrying guns and they are willing to fight the government of South Sudan?
The Lieutenant Colonel also said that the only way that peace comes to South Sudan if Riek Machar is allowed to come back to South Sudan. He's blaming the international community and even your government of making sure that Riek Machar remains in South Africa, saying, in fact, that he's being held hostage in South Africa. Do you know about that?
Will the coming of Riek Machar to South Sudan prevent genocide, or it will bring the genocide? That's the question. If the coming of Riek Machar can stop genocide, there is no genocide, because Riek Machar is the only one capable of committing genocide, not any other person else. So where Riek Machar is living, or where he is not a matter of the government of South Sudan. The government of South Sudan is only making sure that Riek Machar does not come back to South Sudan without announcing that. And where he is not our job as government.
That's Atenwa Katen, spokesman for President Kiir, speaking to VOA's James Buddy from Juba. South Sudanese women activists say the situation is getting worse for women after the 2015 peace agreement was signed. Some say the economic crisis has prevented them from accessing basic health care or education for their children. Others say sexual violence remains rampant across the country. As Nabil Biaja reports from Juba, activists say they can help bring peace to South Sudan if the men silence their guns.
Dozens of South Sudanese women working for different grassroots organizations gathered in Juba today to discuss the many challenges facing women in their country. Melania Ito works with Solidarity for Women Rights Association, or SOA, and one of the organizers of today's event, which attracted more than 50 women. Ito says women have two major concerns.
They are really concerned about the gender-based violence, and in most cases by some personnel in uniform, and also about the economic situation the country is going through.
Regina Cedric Okech is with the Women Child Development Project Organization. Speaking Arabic, she says, poor women are the most vulnerable and are suffering terribly as a result of the country's ongoing fighting and economic hardships.
Grassroots women are the ones suffering the most in South Sudan. Whether married, single, or widow, we are facing all kinds of difficulties. We have no access to education or health care or other basic services.
Okech agrees with Ito that soldiers prey on civilians and continue to rape women with impunity. Speaking in Arabic, Okech says she has a message for the Sudan People's Liberation Army.
I say to the commanding officers of the army, those of Kwame Nyang, Mabuto Mamor, Paul Malong, let them discipline their troops. Let them not come into civilians' areas with their guns and prey on us, civilians, and especially women.
Josephine Nadia Michael works for Women Grassroots Organization. She says the government needs to address the root causes of sexual and gender-based violence in South Sudan.
The root cause of the raping and the violence happen in Juba town around South Sudan. That is a trauma. People traumatized and has a combined stress. They need social healing. In South Sudan, everybody is traumatized because of the crisis.
Michael says South Sudanese soldiers and police also need to be educated, especially on human rights and rule of law.
Other soldiers didn't go to school and they doesn't know their rules. We also wanted at least government to do effort, let them be taken back. They can have education, even if it can start from beginning, from the primary. I think it is after 5 years, 4 years, I think we are going to have the better soldiers able to protect our citizen.
Ito says, despite the difficulties women are going through in South Sudan, there is an opportunity for them to contribute towards peace and economic recovery.
And issues related to economic crisis, I think now they are contributing more than their husbands. What they want is a peaceful environment so that they can move in and out to support their families.
The 2015 peace agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan made some provisions for the inclusion of women in its implementation. Women representation is supposed to go as high as 25% in government institutions and oversight mechanisms. Like so many other provisions in the peace agreement, that has yet to place. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What is causing hepatitis B to be spread among Juba residents? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Name one skill you think everyone should learn.
I think everyone should learn to read, yeah, because I don't think life is even possible without reading.
Know how to cook and also learn how to ride bicycles.
What I can say is the biggest skill is agriculture. When a person is supporting an agricultural process, if you are digging and you have a garden, you use that to attract for cultivation. I can say it is a good skill.
Everyone should know how to drive in case of emergency. You have your friend sick or your mother sick, so you can drive faster to go to the hospital.
If everyone has the skill of listening, there will be no conflict. We don't listen, we just talk.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we're talking about hepatitis B. A physician in Juba says many South Sudanese are at risk of dying from hepatitis B because of their common practice of eating out of one bowl together, spitting in public, and shaking hands often, all ways of spreading the disease. The doctor says he typically diagnoses about 8 patients with the disease in Juba on any given day. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
Hepatitis B is a viral infection when left untreated, affects the liver and can cause serious health problems and can even lead to death. The disease does not always present symptoms. Many people live with hepatitis B for decades without ever feeling sick. Dr. Fred Wani, a consulting physician in Juba, says, unfortunately, the disease is common in South Sudan. He says the disease is mainly spread by body fluids.
Saliva can spread it. Mucus from the nose can spread it, blood can spread it. It's like almost all body fluids can spread it. Now, our social way of doing things in South Sudan is actually conducive to spreading this hepatitis B because we still eat from the same plate, we spit all over the place, we blow our noses into our hands and we greet each other the whole day.
Dr. Wani says the disease usually has no signs or symptoms in the earlier stages. Later, it will turn to joint pain, a swollen and painful abdomen, vomiting, and fever, according to Dr. Wani. He says a hepatitis B test is the only way for people to know if they are infected.
Once somebody has got hepatitis B, there is not much really you can do except to go and get checked up, tested, and if you require treatment, then you get it. By the way, it is not automatic that because of hepatitis B you get treatment, no. There are certain things that we do in order to see whether you really require the treatment. Some of them are what we call liver function tests, an ultrasound of the abdomen, and most important, the viral load.
He says the treatment helps to prevent the lung from damage by the virus so that one can live longer with the disease. A Juba patient with hepatitis B who does not want his name to be used says he did not know he was infected until he got tested.
It's actually very important for one to go and test because the moment it shows the symptom in your body, it's actually the moment all the internal organs are actually destroyed. Because the disease has no symptoms, you may not know that you have hepatitis, not until you go and check when the doctor says you have it.
He says he's taking his medicine and now feels better. Dr. Wani says getting tested helps people access medical treatments that can save their lives. He says people with hepatitis B should avoid alcohol because it can cause additional liver damage. They also should check with health professionals before taking any prescription pills, supplements, or over-the-counter drugs, as they can damage the liver.
All we can do is encourage people to go and get tested early, because this thing is with us. It's not a new disease. It has always been with us here. It's only that, and we suspect it is our social structures and social way of doing things that spreads this hepatitis B. And I don't know how we're going to change our social way of doing things, but somehow, if we can avoid eating from one plate, I think we can go a long way into avoiding spreading this hepatitis B.
And Dr. Wani says life-saving treatments are available to slow down or prevent liver damage, and people who have never been infected with the virus can now get a safe, effective vaccine to protect them from contracting hepatitis B. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The South Sudan government has not paid civil servants and members of the military and other security forces for nearly 4 months now. One civil servant in Juba tells South Sudan in Focus she continues working for the government because there are no options available. Michael Atit has more on the story for VOA from Khartoum.
The government has admitted it does not have enough money to pay its diplomatic missions due to the economic situation in the country. For the past 4 months, civil servants across South Sudan have not been paid either. 49-year-old civil servant in Juba, who prefers to be known only as Agnes for fear of the government retribution, has been struggling to provide for the needs of her children for the last 12 years as a single mother. Agnes started a small-scale business to help feed her children and says she hired another woman to work for her small shop at the local market.
She's faithful to me. If not so, I would not get that money, so that I can pay my children in school. Every morning I give 50 for transport each. And the other one is now in Kampala. But it's now very difficult. Before the dollar could rise, it was very easy for me to change that money. But these days, it is very, very, very difficult. Now I have a lot of loan I'm supposed to pay.
Agnes' salary is 2,700 South Sudanese pounds per month. She works as a clerk, and even if she is given that salary, which has not been paid for months, it is not enough to feed her 8 children. Agnes says she has lost interest working for the government because the money has no value.
I'm just working now conditionally, because if I leave it, I don't have any other place to work. Secondly, also, to stay at home also is bad. I'm working really conditionally. I don't have any spirit even to work.
Agnes says the worsening economic situation has forced her to take on other odd jobs.
I sometimes go and look for washing clothes for people. There are some people, you go and look for those who are bachelors. I go and wash for them. I have a friend of mine used to come here, and she's working in somebody's house. She's the one bringing for me the market. She'll come and say there are some people there need their clothes to be washed. So sometimes on weekends, I go and wash and iron, then I come. I get a good amount of money.
Agnes washes and irons an article of cloth for 10 South Sudanese pounds. She earns between 300 to 500 South Sudanese pounds per week. She says even if she's doing another extra job, she is not happy because the money she makes does not feed her family. She says life in South Sudan is difficult as many families have nothing to eat.
I'm really very, very traumatized because of the situation, because of even the security life is not good. I don't sleep at night. I think too much. And even I think of getting out from this country. Sometimes I said, let me go to the camp. And if I hear the stories of the camp also, it's not good also. So I wish God to help us to see this situation that we are in.
Agnes says she believes God has a plan for her country and urges the nation's political leaders to stop fighting so that people can finally live in peace and work for the development of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Environmental activists and residents in Yei River State are raising the alarm over entire forest reserves that have been clear-cut. Activists say six major forest reserves in Yei River State have been cleared by logging companies. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei.
Residents of Anya County are blaming the state government for failing to enact any environmental protection policy. Nyalmo Joel is a resident of Bakula Payam of Yei River County. He says an entire forest reserve in his village has been cleared, and as a result, residents are experiencing a drought.
The community is not benefiting, especially those in Pakula. They went with the ticks. They did not even give the community like a borehole, school, and even health facilities are very poor. The worst thing is, up to today, we are not even seeing rain. It's because of too much cutting of our trees.
Another resident, Maurice Loboyo, says local forest plantation is threatened with extinction. He too blames the state officials for not doing enough to protect national forest reserves.
These companies came here to rule the government. The government is supposed to be serious in telling them the impact of cutting of the trees, because at the end of the day it will affect the community, and they are not planting. That means the coming generation will be in problem. They are supposed to provide some basic services like schools, water. But this thing is not happening.
Malice Clinton, managing director of the Rubena Ladu Timber Company, says his company has been paying taxes to help fund basic services. Clinton says the State Ministry of Agriculture has not issued directives for tree plantation in areas that have been cleared. Speaking in Arabic, he also says rampant insecurity has prevented timber companies from investing in forestry management such as replanting trees.
What we want from you is to find for us the land to plant more ticks into, and we will find out agriculturalists to plant for you the ticks. Okay, and after it has been done, we will hand over to you through the Payam. The government only employs 25% of the total population, but the remaining 75% will work in the private sector.
Malice Stephen is the program manager for socioeconomic transformation, a civil society organization working on environmental protection in the area. Malice warns of worsening conditions if no steps are taken to avert desertification in Yei River State.
My appeal to the government, we should not be continuing to allow the companies just to go away with our logs like that. They should be asked to plant new trees for the country, take care of them, and make sure that these trees also mature for future use.
The Director General for Yei River State Forestry Sector, David Taban Silas, confirmed that most of the government forest reserves such as Kegulu, Kejiko, and Pakula have been cleared without planting new trees. He says insecurity in the state has drastically affected the management of new tree plantations. And Taban says the forestry department has not been given a budget for managing existing forest plantation projects in the state.
People are cutting. When you ask them, they get the approvals from the national government. At the same time, all the state government gives approvals. I cannot tell you exactly where the revenue goes.
Taban says in all the wars fought in South Sudan, the forestry sector has suffered the most. Yei River State falls within the tropical equatorial forest, which stretches from the Democratic Republic of Congo up to South Sudan. Yei River farmers enjoy rainfall throughout the year and cultivate a variety of crops for both domestic and commercial use. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Athumani by Orchestra Makasi.
Asumani, vipi mambo balu.
We've been listening to Orchestra Makasi with the song Athumani. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. We hope to see you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.